Hello, we're with BARD's MBA in Sustainability, Sustainable Business Fridays. We're very pleased today to be talking with Amy Hall, who is the Director of Sustainability at Eileen Fisher.
Thank you very much, Eben and Jessica. I'm very honored to be on the phone call today. Just a little about my background. This coming Sunday marks my 20th anniversary with the company, so you've caught me at a good time. Never imagined I'd be with this company this long, but it's been an amazing journey, and it all started back when I first came on board as the assistant to the CEO of the company, and because of my background prior to joining, the company as a fundraiser for nonprofit organizations, I started to help create a structure within the company to respond to requests for grants and donations. And as a result, I became the company's first community relations manager 4 years after I joined the company. So the evolution since then toward where I am today as Director of Social Consciousness has been really one of a natural evolution. Today, my role encompasses a team. I really lead a team here that overlooks not only our relationships with our community partners and how we support women and girls through those relationships, but also human rights in our supply chain and environmental sustainability through our everyday practices as well as our product. And that's my role, really. I also am on the Leadership Forum, which is a group of about 25 leaders in the company who kind of advise and contribute to thinking around larger company priorities. And I co-lead the people and culture area here with my colleagues from human resources, leadership, learning, and development, and internal communications. So that's a little about me and the role I play here.
That's great. Can you tell us a little bit about the history with Eileen Fisher and how sort of this focus on social consciousness and, the environmental piece of things in particular got started?
Well, so Eileen Fisher was founded 30 years ago, and Eileen herself, who's still with the company and very active in the company, founded the company with a commitment to natural fibers. So 30 years ago, that felt like a very strong and purposeful commitment, and that is how the product kind of evolved from that place. By the time I joined the company, 10 years after it was founded, we were just beginning to dabble in some other types of fibers, such as fox fibers, which is cotton that's grown in colors, fleece made from plastic water bottles, and eventually, by the late 1990s, early 2000s, we had evolved to using organic cotton, beginning to use organic cotton in our product. And around in the mid-90s, around 1997, we introduced human rights to our work, really recognizing that without the people in our supply chain, we wouldn't have a product, nor would we have a business. Mm-hmm. So all of that started to evolve and kind of in a parallel track. So while these values have been present from the beginning, a real concern for the people in the company, evolving to the people in the supply chain, and then starting with natural fibers and evolving to a more, mature recognition of the total impact of our product. It's definitely been, a very organic process. Today we are about 25% of our product we consider to be eco. 50% of all of our cotton is organic. We use Blue Sign certified silk and linen. We have a very solid commitment to international workplace standards like SA 8000 and the Ethical Trading Initiative. We have fair trade products. So we've really we really continue to I guess deepen our commitment through various initiatives out there in the world, and we feel that we're just, you know, we really are on a journey. I know that, you know, you introduced me and the company earlier as a leader in this work, and while maybe in terms of other apparel companies we may be doing some things differently, but we really feel like we are just scratching the surface. We have so much more to do.
So as a testament to that, you mentioned the Blue Sign Silk certification, or the SA 8000 standard. And when I was doing some reading, I found out that you were actually involved in the drafting of that. Is that right?
Well,
Involved in the early stages of that?
Yeah, I've been involved with Social Accountability International since about 1997. And that was, I believe, the first year that SA 8000 was introduced. So I came into SAI kind of at the tail end of the first iteration of SA 8000. It has since been revised a couple of times, and I've been involved ever since. I've been on the advisory board this entire time.
Great.
I'm now the chair of the advisory board. So, yes, I've had some input, although it's very much a collaborative process. And,
yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. I don't want to take too much credit for that.
It's a really neat thing that you've really stepped up early, I think, in a lot of these things, especially, like you said, in the apparel industry. These are some of the certifications and standards, and I feel like you are at the forefront, or what I can see in reading about Eileen Fisher, you've really been at the forefront of signing on to those things. So has that been a really intentional thing? I mean, really seeking that out as part of the company, trying to be looking for new ways to make things more ethical for the sector as a whole. How did that sort of culture come about with Eileen Fisher?
Taking
a lead in the industry standards.
I wouldn't say we always had that mindset. I'd say for many years we were kind of in the background watching what was happening out there, trying to understand what was happening, what pieces would work in our company. And one of the realizations that we had along the way was that we're a relatively small company. We are today a company of about 1,000 people. And compared to some of the bigger names out there, that's really a drop in the bucket. So for us to really have any kind of real impact on even just our own supply chain, let alone the greater world, we really do have to partner with other companies, other brands, and organizations to make this work. And I don't think that's a unique perspective. Many brands feel the same way. It started with a recognition that we were not the only brand in the factories, many of the factories that we use. So partnering with the other brands that were in those factories always made sense to us. And even coming to SA 8000, which is a globally recognized workplace standard, we saw that as an opportunity to be part of a bigger movement and to have kind of a uniform message going to our suppliers, similar to other brands who may also be using SA 8000 in their supply chain or other standards that are very similar. So it's really, we see ourselves as part of a bigger movement. And sometimes when we step into a new initiative or are thinking about how to tackle a particular issue, the existing methodologies out there may not quite fit our culture or the way we think. So, you know, we'll try something new. And if others want to join us, that's fabulous. But it isn't necessarily, we don't necessarily see ourselves as stepping into that leadership role all the time.
Yeah. And another question kind of connected to that, how does, this sounds like a very collaborative approach, and I think that is a really great and effective way to do this kind of work. How does that work in a competitive business environment? Do you find that your competitors are sort of benefiting in ways that hurt you, or is it sort of a rising tide for all of you, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's a really good question. And on one hand, we don't really see ourselves as having direct competitors in the marketplace. We see our product as being unique, filling a unique niche in women's lives. So on one level, that question doesn't necessarily apply to us. But on the other, on the other hand, other brands may not see that, have that same perspective of us. So, you know, people in my role at other companies, we are very much part of a network, and we are, consider ourselves colleagues. We share best practices between, you know, through all these various networks that we join. And we see, we really, I think that many, many brands have come to the realization that we need to be in this together. I mean, there are many multi-brand initiatives that have taken shape, such as the Sustainable Apparel Coalition, the one, you know, the SLA, I mean, even SA8000, users of SA8000. We're all part of these coalitions of like-minded brands that want to move something forward. So I wouldn't say that our perspective is particularly unusual or unique.
That's great.
Yeah. But, really? You know, we are always, we've always interested in engaging with brands that we haven't met before, looking for the possibilities between between ourselves, you know, looking for that little nugget of mutual interest so that we can be stronger together out there and really work for a positive social and environmental change.
That's great. Wonderful perspective. Eden, feel free to interrupt if there are calls that come in. Or if we want to welcome calls from the audience at any point here. But I do have plenty to keep asking Amy in the meantime.
I want to ask Amy a question. Also, I'll let folks know that if they want to ask a question to Amy Hall, to hit 5-star on their phones, and that will enable you to, we can enable you to ask a question. You are Director of Social Consciousness, which is a great title. Do you want to speak to sort of how you see sustainability as a subset of social consciousness, or I noticed that there's sort of four pillars to your portfolio, sustainability, human rights, supporting women, and community partnerships. How do you define sustainability in the context of social consciousness?
Well, it's such a funny question, actually, because while we have on our team, we have a sustainability leader, and her role is very much environmentally focused. At the same time, sustainability is a company priority, and when we think of sustainability as a company priority, we define it as human, environmental, and economic. So it actually goes both ways in the company, and I would say that we tend to think of it really in the bigger arc of sustainability. They really go hand in hand. You can't have human sustainability without environmental sustainability or economic sustainability for that matter. Does that answer your question?
Well, okay, but within your job, do you segment along those four? I mean, do you have sort of in those different areas? How do you think about it?
The way that it manifests on the team, for example, we do have one person dedicated to environmental issues, one person dedicated to human rights, and one person dedicated to community and women and girls. And so from a purely functional place, they are, you know, defined, very clearly defined. However, there is a ton of cross-pollination between all three areas and within the company. And so when we think of how we source our product, for example, we can't really have a conversation that doesn't include the environmental impacts and the social impacts and, to some extent, the impact on women in the supply chain. So there are people, you know, assigned to kind of overseeing that each of those values gets appropriate attention within the company and that it continues to pervade the thinking and the decision-making and the planning that goes on in the company. But in truth, it's very much intertwined in everybody's thinking here.
So you don't really find tension between the people who are working in these different areas too much?
I wouldn't say so, not at all. No, very much, very collaborative, very much a place of mutual support and It isn't perfect. And one example of where it isn't perfect is that at this moment in time, we tend to think of our of human rights in our supply chain as applying primarily to our first tier suppliers, and the environmental issues tend to come up at the second tier and below, because that's where the fiber is sourced and treated and dyed and spun and all of that. So the intention is to merge both values throughout the supply chain, because you know there are people at all levels of the supply chain, going back to the fields, the agricultural fields, and there are certainly environmental impacts at every stage as well. We just haven't quite gotten there from a resource bandwidth place at this moment.
Great. We've got 646-221-7307. You have a question for Amy.
Great, thank you. This is Dan Sicardi calling in from the Clean Tech Group. Thanks very much, Amy, for sharing your really great perspectives there. I had a question about the Sustainable Apparel Coalition, and just in seeing some of the progress you've made, it strikes me as one of the more successful industry initiatives. I'd be curious to get your perspective on what about that collaboration has worked really well and what other industries might be able to take away from it as they try to think about similar approaches.
Oh, boy, that is that's a big question. You know, I'm going to be really honest with you, Dan. We are a very new member. We only just joined a few months ago, and we are just beginning to understand kind of what its value is to us as a company and to the broader industry. One person on my team just attended the conference last month in Spain, and that was really our first interaction with SAC. So I have to say we're still learning for ourselves what its impact is and its potential. So I'm not really sure I have a good answer for you. The value to us, the reason we joined, is because of the broad range of organizational and brand members and the opportunity to have a bigger impact externally than we currently do, but also to learn for ourselves how to bring some metrics into our supply chain. We don't really measure a lot yet. We do on the environmental side, not so much on the social side. So we have a rather kind of selfish reason for joining, so that we can learn from this group that's really invested a lot of time and resources into an area that we have not yet delved into very deeply. So I'm sorry I can't completely answer your question, but that's where we are at the moment.
So Jessica, back to you. If you'd like to ask Amy Hall a question, please hit 5-star on your phone.
Thanks, Stephen. Amy, just wondering about some of the things, some of the types of conflicts or challenges that you find within the company as you implement social consciousness initiatives. Does that ever happen?
of course, on a daily basis, there are conflicts and challenges. I have to start big, and just the first thing that comes to mind for me is the fact that we are a fashion company and that we make a lot of clothing, right? And clothing mm-hmm. inherently is a polluter, both at the front end during the manufacturing phase and at the other end, the end phase, discard phase. And so, you know, we're inherently making stuff that goes into the waste stream and pollutes the earth. So we need to be profitable and both in order to sustain the initiatives that we're doing, through our environmental initiatives and our human rights initiatives, et cetera, but we also to be able to fulfill some of the other, undertakings that we believe in, such as leadership, leadership for women and girls, leadership for our employees, for others in the community. So wellness, well-being, there are a whole slew of values that we uphold here. So that in itself is a huge conflict, and I think in an ideal world, our hope and our goal would be to be able to produce a product in a much more responsible manner, to the point that there either is no waste or at least very little waste at the end, that the product itself can be reused, recycled, and when it's finally disposed of, will be less polluting, if not at all polluting. Our Green Eileen initiative is one big initial solution to that, which is where we take back old Eileen Fisher, previously worn Eileen Fisher clothes, and we repair them, clean them, and resell them in the Green Eileen stores and through some of our company stores to people who may not be able to afford full-price clothing or who are looking for something that they remember wearing 5-10 years ago and wish they had never given it up. So that's one way we've tackled that. In terms of conflicts and challenges, I would have to say cost, of course, comes up. Cost of sustainable fabrics can be more expensive than traditional fabrics. Cost of, for example, refitting our dye house, the dye house we use in China, to become Blue Sign certified. The return on investment is not always immediately visible when we think about investing resources. So really trusting in the beginning that this is the right step in the right direction and feeling that the return will follow at some point is a big part of the conversation. And the third thing that comes to mind for me is just the variations within the company of individual beliefs, their level of awareness, level of understanding about the various issues that we uphold here that we want to pursue. Some people are much more drawn to environmental issues. Some people are much more drawn to human issues. Some people really just want to get their work done and go home. And so, we try every day different kinds of tactics to inspire people, motivate people, guide people along, and that takes time and a lot of energy.
Yeah, great. So on the flip side of that, what advantages do you think there are of being a socially conscious business, and in terms of the marketplace in particular? But you know, if you have internal benefits that you can articulate as well around your employee satisfaction or your attraction of employees, talk a little bit about what you think the advantages are of this, pursuing this path, even at it, you know, additional cost and effort and intensity.
Well, for many years, we were doing this, I would have to say, under the radar. So we were not intentionally putting out to the public or to our customers a lot of information about what was going on behind the scenes in terms of how we were producing the clothing or what we were even doing here internally at the company for our employees, that kind of thing. Eileen felt very strongly that she didn't want the messaging to be misconstrued. In other words, she was afraid of people misconstruing this as greenwashing, for example. So for many years, we were just doing what we believed in and then just selling great clothes, right? And as customers became aware of what was going on and they were recognizing the values that we really have lived by all these years, they would say things like, gosh, I wish I had known about this years ago. I would have purchased your clothing earlier, or what else is going on? I really love to know more about that. And so a little over a year ago, we started with a new campaign. We call it the Ampersand Campaign, which allows us much more airtime and white space to share stories, the stories behind our products that we haven't been able to tell because, you know, there's only so much room on a hang tag or so much room for signage in the stores, et cetera. And so this is an opportunity to share a much more in-depth story about what we were thinking of when we, for example, first started working on the Blue Sign silk product, or when we went to China, what were we seeing? Things like that. And it has resonated very well with the customers. So despite our fears, I guess, all the years of sort of coming out with all of this information, in fact, the reception has been quite strong, and people have really enjoyed reading these stories and learning about them. And, of course, have asked a lot more questions, which is delightful. We really enjoy that, that communication with our customers. So I have to say the customer loyalty, customer retention is definitely very strong because partially, of course, it's because of the great product, but also because of the values that we have now and that are much more accessible to our customers. And on the employee side, there's no doubt that what we stand for as a company attracts amazing employees, amazing people to our staff here. We have very, very low turnover rate. Last I heard it was under 5%, which is kind of pretty low as far as I understand. So,
yeah, that's great.
You know, people come here because of the values, and they stay because of the values. It's really, I think, a unique opportunity to find a place that allows people to be themselves and to act on the things that they believe in on a personal level, bring that to their work, and feel rewarded for acting on those beliefs and having and being. Oh, I'm a little tongue-tied at the moment, but you're getting the idea here.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. That's great. And I'll put a little plug in there too for anyone who's listening too. If you're interested in finding out more about this, to check out the Amber Sand campaign on the Eileen Fisher website. It's very informative. When I was starting to learn about this and getting in touch with Amy, it was a great source of information and ideas and just really creative stories about what's going on with your supply chain and your employees and your practices. So I have found it to be very interesting and inspiring as someone who's interested in the garment and textile industry. So it's really great. And again, Evan, what is the prompt? 5-star if people want to call in with questions.
If you'd like to ask a question to Amy, hit 5-star on your phone. You're listening to Sustainable Business Fridays with Bard's MBA in Sustainability. We're a first and fourth Fridays phone call talking with sustainability business leaders in the New York City area and around the globe. If you'd like more information about Sustainable Business Fridays, want to get on our mailing list for next semester, or would like information about the Bard MBA in Sustainability program, please drop us an email at mba@bard.edu. Amy, actually, while we're on the subject of MBAs, I know you have an MBA in Sustainability from Green Mountain College, I believe. And I'm just curious about your decision to pursue an MBA sort of mid-career.
Well,
you know, what did you learn, and has it been a valuable experience for you?
Well, so that's a great question, too. When I decided to pursue an MBA, I had been with this company now for 15 years, and while I loved my job and I, you know, couldn't really imagine doing anything differently, all of what I knew about social consciousness and sustainability I learned here at Eileen Fisher. And I was beginning to wonder if maybe I shouldn't maybe, you know, expand my horizons a little bit, whether to prepare myself for a potential career shift at some point or a different opportunity within the company. I didn't know what might come down the pike, but I guess you could say I was having a little bit of a midlife crisis. So I decided to pursue that MBA. Had Bard existed at the time, I would have definitely made that my first choice, but Green Mountain College was a great option for me, and being the mother of what were then much younger children, I didn't have the flexibility to leave home as often as I would need to for a residential program. So this was primarily an online program. And what I learned through it was that, A, I actually knew more than I thought I knew. So in a way, it sort of justified the experience I had been having at Eileen Fisher, which I was much relieved to know, actually, because we are kind of an unusual company, and I always wondered if I was living in kind of in the real world, so to speak. The other piece of it was that it gave me the language, sort of the business language, and the confidence to see myself more at the core of the business here rather than where I perceived myself at the time, which was more on the periphery or as a siloed initiative. And in all truth, this over the past year or two, sustainability has quite moved into the center of things here, whereas prior to that, it really had been, you know, on the edge or maybe almost a secondary thought to people's work. So I would say it did help me make that not make that shift per se, but really help me be comfortable in this place where I have to think more about the effect on the business and be connecting more with senior leaders here in the company. So that, for me, was the value. It came at a difficult time for me in my life. I was my father actually passed away while I was taking that, getting that degree, and so I really had to persist to get through it. And I was so happy when I was able to complete it. And I think I just needed a little bit of a recharge, to be honest, at that point. But where I am now, I feel so so much more ready now to take on you know, bigger responsibility here at the office and at the company and through my external partnerships, which of which there are many. So that was really where I landed after getting out of that program.
So it sort of strengthened your sustainability foundation or reinforced kind of what you felt like you already knew about the sustainability side, but gave you this new language that provided you confidence to engage more seriously with the core of the business.
Yes, absolutely.
And at the same time, the business was reaching out to you to draw you in because they needed you more.
Yes, you could. That's right.
That's interesting. Okay, we have 973-494-2228. Got a question for Amy.
Thanks, Ethan. This is Megan Ryan. I'm also a student in the BART MBA program. I'm curious, it seems like product innovation is a really high point of leverage in terms of building in social consciousness and sustainability into a product from the drawing board. And I'm curious, Amy, if you might be able to talk a little bit about Eileen Fisher's approach to product innovation, R&D, maybe even supplier collaboration in the context of sustainability and social consciousness.
Okay. Wow, a very interesting question, because just this week we posted a new job on our website. Oh, I don't know if it's on our website. It came up internally anyway, and it will be on our website shortly if it's not there. And it is an R&D chemistry specialist. And that is actually a new role that is going to be located within our fabric team, which is in our design team. And it's really, as far as I would say, the first time that we have created a role specifically with the intention to drive product innovation at the beginning of the product life cycle, rather than what we've been doing typically, which is kind of addressing things after the fact in the most cases. So for us, this is a new direction. Up to this point, I would say that a lot of the product innovation has come through seeing what's already out there on the marketplace in terms of organic fabrics, undyed fabrics, recycled fabrics. So this will allow us to look at what we already know we love and see if we can push the edge a little bit rather than waiting for it to show up naturally in the marketplace. So there have been there's certainly a lot of conversation that goes on already with the mills around what they're developing and what's possible. That's on the environmental side. On the human rights side, we certainly bring our suppliers into conversations constantly around how they can to ensure that their people in the supply chain in their factories are not only being treated well, but you know, we ask them to try new things. Sometimes we ask them to consider bringing training into the factories, to consider different kinds of programs that might elevate the experience of the employees in their workplaces, learning about social skills, learning about financial skills, learning about health care, personal health care. This was in the beginning when we first started introducing these concepts, there was some hesitation on the part of the suppliers, and nowadays they are generally happy to have to have this kind of training brought in, or to bring new opportunities for their workers to the workplace because they see that it helps helps the workers feel more greater respect, feel valued in the workplace. They may want to stay longer. You know, there's a little bit of an effect on the productivity. So that's really how we've been working with our suppliers over the years.
Jessica, back to you.
Amy, I'm really interested in the correlation between the rise of sustainability in the food sector and local foods and the consumer awareness about how understanding the supply chain of what we eat and where food comes from or how it's grown, how it's raised, and how that affects the environment and our health. Do you see any correlation between that and the garment industry and understanding more about the supply chain or the impact that the garment industry has on the environment or on human rights and things around the world? Do you see that there any sort of growing correlation between those two from the consumer side of things?
You know, the idealist side of me would like to say yes. But I feel like we're still struggling in that area. I feel like people in general have not found the same emotional connection with the environmental impacts of clothing as they have with food. Somehow, when you think about eating something and digesting it, it's quite different than just having it on the outside of your skin. And people, you know, it just is the reality. There was such an interesting quote made not too long ago by a colleague of ours at Loom State, which is an environmentally responsible apparel company. And their sustainability person said, when you consider what happens when we pick cotton and what all the components of that cotton plant that end up going into other products, and you think about the seeds, everybody forgets about the cotton seed. And in truth, we may have more cotton in us than on us at any given moment. And I thought, wow, that is a really powerful message and something that if only we could translate that to our consumers in a way that, that will touch them and that will last. I don't think we've gotten there yet. So I do think we will get there because as a global community, we don't have a choice. The resources are disappearing. We're going to run out of them over time. Very soon, in fact, within the next 30 to 50 years, we are going to, just for pure survival purposes, every business is going to need to make substantial changes in how it produces its product if it's going to maintain the kind of the level of productivity and profitability that it enjoys today. So I believe that consumers over time will get there, and I hope sooner than later.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I have a question for Amy Fisher, Director of Social Consciousness at Eileen Fisher. I'm sorry, Amy Hall, Director of Social Consciousness at Eileen Fisher. I'm sure. You feel free to dial 5-star on your phone, and we can patch you in.
Actually, I have one email, Jessica, from 508-942-3937.
Hello?
Yep, you're on the air.
Oh, sorry. This is Professor Weiss. We're calling in from LaSalle College in Newton, Massachusetts. Sorry, we're very excited that we're on this call. Can you hear us?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, super. Well, I have a really interesting question, and I'm sort of posing a challenge. I think one of the most important things for consumers anytime that companies en masse are trying to relay a message is branding. And I think if you study the recycled logo back in the 70s and how that came to fruition and you look at how that evolved onto packaged goods, I can honestly say that the same thing would be a viable option for the apparel industry. So the one problem is that companies are putting so much money and resources into being sustainable, and God bless them for doing it. but they're not communicating to the consumer in a consolidated manner. So if we could somehow as an industry, and I know this is sort of a pie in the sky kind of philosophy, but if we could somehow as an industry come up with a logo or brand, and you can even have it on different levels like a sustainable one, sustainable two, sustainable three, where we're actually communicating these practices to the consumer, we would be in a pretty good situation. I think the consumer is ready to adopt these changes, and there's a lot of, I think, sustainability awareness, but we're not doing our job by communicating effectively as an entire industry, whether it's through retailers or through manufacturers, a brand, and if it's just a little S with a circle around it or anything, that's put on tickets. But it has to be an easy message that the consumer will understand. I think we would make a lot of headway. So that's just an idea. I have a classroom of students, and they're very excited about Eileen Fisher. They've been watching your videos during the conference call. So give us your insight in terms of what we just posed to you.
Well, I conceptually, I love the idea, absolutely. I think it would make a lot of sense. In terms of getting this to happen, I was just jotting down how many different initiatives. First of all, we'd all have to agree as an industry on what sustainable means. Are we just talking about environmental issues? Are we talking about the intersection of environmental and human rights? Are we talking about women? Are we talking about is it just the product? Is it also our company practices? Does it include shipping, packaging? What are the boundaries? So that in itself, to me, would be an important conversation. So when I think about all the different standards out there, just in terms of the apparel industry, we've got Fairtrade, SA 8000, SLA, RAP, BSCI, Ecotex, GOTS, BlueSign, SAC, ETI. They're just, they go on and on. That's just a few of them. So somehow we'd have to be able to rank them in order to come up with a sustainable 1, 2, 3 designation. I'm just thinking, wow, how would we ever get to that? There have been many attempts over the years for collaboration between any number of these separate initiatives, and it hasn't gone anywhere particularly. So, on one hand, I feel like, gosh, there's a proliferation of codes and standards, and we need to absolutely get our arms around them. There are too many. It's confusing for the consumers. I completely agree. And on the other hand, what do we really mean, and who would lead this effort? Who would lead it with integrity, and who would lead it in a way that others would follow? That is a big question for me. Maybe you guys at LaSalle College can figure this out. I would love that.
Amy, here's a question for you. What would you say is, what was your biggest failure at Eileen Fisher?
Ooh.
What did you try to get done that just didn't work?
Well, I'll tell you one. The biggest one, that's a big question. I can think of one immediately that happened many years ago. I can think of two, actually, that were probably over 10 years ago at this point, but still relevant today. So one of them was we were distressed at learning that in our local factories here in New York, which is true of most domestic suppliers, it's not just limited to us or these factories, but anyway, that there was no health benefit offered to the employees. And when we delved, we had some interviews conducted, and we talked both to the managers and the workers. We discovered that part of it was the fact that the margins were so slim that, they didn't feel that they could afford it, the employers didn't feel they could afford it, and the workers were getting their medical care through emergency rooms or through acupuncture practitioners or, kind of incident by incident. So we decided to try something. We developed a partnership with HIP, HIP and decided to tag on a premium to what we were paying the factory for their production. So it was so many cents per piece. I forget now the actual amount. It was 30 cents maybe per item, something like that. And that money was to go into a special fund to pay for health insurance for these employees. We were so excited about this. We thought, great, we finally figured it out. And what happened was, only about a third of the employees in this particular factory ended up signing up for insurance because either they had insurance through a spouse or they really weren't interested. You know, they were happy with the way things were. And of the third that signed up, most of them dropped it when after the first year. They didn't renew because they didn't understand how health insurance worked here. They didn't understand about getting paying a premium and or a copay. What does that mean? How do you find a doctor? Who, you know, we didn't recognize the vast cultural difference in understanding between us and that factory and the workers in that factory. And the entire project failed. So
I wonder if that's going to be a lesson for Obamacare.
My goodness, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was just an example of something that we thought we were doing a really great job, and boy, did it fall flat on its face.
Great. Jessica, back to you.
Can you tell us a little bit about how the culture of innovation and risk-taking or focusing on these kind of benefits around social consciousness and impact across the supply chain. Tell us what sustains that at Eileen Fisher. Where does that, you know, core come from, and how do you sustain it over time? You've sustained it now for 30 years as a company. How do you do that over time?
Well, one thing about our company is that we do very highly value the individual here. While we are a highly collaborative company, most of what we do here is collaborative. There's still something about valuing individual passion that we really value. We want people to bring their passion to work. And what happens as a result is people get really excited about things. So we don't want to dampen that excitement, and we really do want to, because we believe if you can bring your passion to work, you're going to just be that much happier, and you're going to want to, you know, stay, and you're going to want to work hard. And we do have very highly motivated and hardworking employees here. The flip side of it is that there is a lot of stress because people kind of take on more than they might really should be taking on. You know, bandwidth is always stretched. And we're really bad at saying no, so there might be a whole bunch of new ideas in any given year, and people will just want to pursue them. And we kind of have this culture of letting people try things out and seeing where it goes. You know, we kind of wait for that energy to converge around something and to see which ones rise up. You know, people will dabble in a few different projects, and some of them will kind of take hold and others won't. So it's that sense of looking for that that communal energy that we experience here in the company. Creativity is also a core value here. We often say creativity is at the center, and while that emanates from the creative side of getting the product made, it's also true of really any team you might think of here, whether it's accounting or facilities or social consciousness or whatever. So I think that it's all about the creativity, the valuing the individual, and the collaboration. We're true kind of new energy sparks all the time here.
How about communication from your office? I mean, is that an important piece that you're trying to keep everybody on top of your initiatives?
It's definitely important, and it's really, really, really hard. So two things. We started an internal communications team, not social consciousness, but the whole company started an internal communications team several years ago because we really recognized the need to keep people informed, and we really weren't doing a great job of it prior to this team coming on. And social consciousness is definitely a key feeder of information through to our internal communications team for our intranet and other ways that they keep people informed. There's a whole retail component of that. Keeping our retail staff informed and engaged is very, very important and challenging. So, you know, we are definitely on board with that. The other piece of it is that we have social consciousness is a key strategy of our social media, is a key component of our social media strategy. So we have constant messaging going out around things that we're involved in, things we're thinking of, events that we think people should know about, or you know, anything along those lines related to environment, human rights, women and girls, community, even expanding it into wellness, well-being, and other values that are important to the company. So, but all of that takes time. You know, the one thing I would say about all of the work we do at Social Consciousness is that it's very people-oriented. It's all about engaging people, motivating people, helping people maybe modify or change their behaviors, whether it's people in the company or people at the customer level or wherever, any of our core partners out there. So part of that happens through the way we communicate. And so we recognize it as hugely valuable and important and also a big challenge because it takes time.
How do you drive this into the stores? I mean, how do you keep your retail folks engaged with this piece?
Well, a number of different ways. We many of the people in our retail stores sit on our grant committees, so that's one way. So that we invite them in to have a regular role in some of our work. Another way is through we have on the internal communications team. There is a person dedicated to retail communications, and she is really good at taking nuggets of what we're working on and finding, you know, ways to weave that into the connections that she has to the stores. A lot of times that is information related to our product because the stores are so much about selling the product. We also, whenever we are traveling, we spend time visiting the stores, engaging with the store teams, and answering questions, and we go to manager meetings. You know, we try to interface whenever possible. We are about to step our toe into a new program we're calling Sustainability Ambassadors, where we're going to be inviting people from who have an interest in sustainability, the broad spectrum of sustainability, to interface with us on a more intentional level and learn about what we're working on so that they can be, you know, kind of carrying the flag for their region, their area, their team, if they're located here in New York, and so that more and more people can become, I guess, fluent in this language and in the everyday work of our team, because it's very hard to keep up with, and we recognize that.
Jessica, one last question from you.
Okay. I'm interested in what effort that you come through social consciousness in some way at Eileen Fisher that you're either most excited about right now or most proud of that you've accomplished.
Just one? Oh, boy. Well, I have to say that every time I hear somebody say, some version of the sentence, oh, I've been doing, for example, I have been a designer all these years, and now I really have a new purpose in my work. That, to me, is the goal. That's my personal goal. I want to hear everybody say that. And finding that little, you know, what that light bulb, finding the switch to that light bulb, for me, is the goal. And so an example of how that happened most recently was we formed we called it the sustainability offsite, where we invited about 18 people from various teams that all have input into the creation of our products, so starting at the design level all the way through manufacturing and then everything in between. And we had 3.5 days offsite at a very beautiful location in upstate New York. We didn't know what was going to come out of it. We decided we wouldn't have too rigid an agenda. We had an outside facilitator. And we decided we would see if we could come up with some kind of new inspiration, new direction, whatever. And what came out of that was a recognition that the way we place our internal orders for fabrics, you know, at the supply chain level, and then reorder and reorder and reorder based on changing requests from our various wholesale partners, et cetera, that system in itself causes a great deal of stress and causes a lot of waste in terms of shipping and a lot of expense. And there was a commitment made at that offsite, which was just now 2 months ago, to really take a hard look at how this order processing takes place. And with the goal, ultimately, to have this impact positively our carbon footprint and potentially reduce waste and obviously reduce stress, also human emotional stress. So that was tremendous, and we could never have anticipated that. And we're now in the planning stages to bring more people into this kind of offsite experience, different other groups of people throughout the company in the next year and a half or so, to see what comes out of it, to really drive deeper, meaningful change in the company.
That's great.
Well, Amy, for joining us, I want to ask you just sort of any last thoughts for our MBA students who are on the line. And next semester we'll be back. We'll have Toby Usnick from Christie's, Sustainability Coordinator at Christie's, and another lineup of about 7 or 8 of these talks over the semester. So if you'd like more information, please send us an email at bard@mba.edu. Jessica King, thank you and for organizing and asking questions today. So Jessica, any last words to Amy before she gives us the final last word?
Thank you very much for participating. This is a really encouraging conversation for me, and I really appreciate your time. Thanks for sharing with us.
Well, it was my pleasure. And as far as a final thought, as I mentioned earlier, this is my 20th year with the company, and my learning from that is change takes time. This work has been ongoing since about 1997, and we still have so much more work to do. So we all need to be patient, and we need to be recognized, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, this is all about people. Despite the fact that we're talking about environmental issues and social issues in our supply chain, it's really about helping people recognize the importance, the urgency of this work, and helping them come along without telling them and without kind of directing them. It's really about nudging them and helping them recognize it for themselves, and that is both what takes time and where the value is and where the permanence happens. So just leave it at that.
Thank you so much, Amy. Have a great afternoon, everybody, and thank you so much for calling in. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.